Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Andrea Sakathian.
I've learned like so much from like every single person in this group of how to like train better or recover better or race better or just like generally just be a better runner. And so I think it is like extremely important for me at least to be surrounded by a group of people who are just like really striving for like the same things as me. And to also be surrounded by people who have accomplished things that I want to accomplish.
On this episode of The Rundown, I had an entertaining talk with elite marathoner and 50K track world record holder, CJ Albertson. He grew up with a competitive nature and a desire to win at everything he did, not just in sports. That spirit definitely carried through into his pro marathon career. We spoke about CJ's incredible showing at the US trials, his experience at the Marathon Project, and how his training regimen might be a little crazier than most. He's one of the most promising marathoners in the sport, so don't be surprised if you see his name atop the leaderboard in the near future. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, there was a big announcement from Hoka One One just a few weeks ago. 40 of their athletes will line up at two separate races this weekend. The event is called the Project Carbon X2, where these runners will attempt to break the 100K world record. The records are currently held by Jim Walmsley and Camille Herron, both of which are competing in the Phoenix, Arizona race, and the start list looks stacked. The other race will be held in Chiba, Japan. After a race like the Marathon Project, this seems to be the new trend in racing. Small, intimate groups of elites duking it out for the ultimate prize. I'm not gonna lie, I find it very exciting and it makes for even more competitive racing. Looking forward to following along with this one. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these upcoming events, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. With the crazy year we've had the opportunity to view two pretty incredible events, the U.S. Olympic Trials and the Marathon Project, which just happened last December. My next guest actually participated in both of those, and he's also known for some pretty crazy training runs as well. I'll mention the treadmill run that he did, marathon, in 2:09, which is crazy impressive. I can't even run an hour on a treadmill. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you CJ Albertson.
Hi, guys. Yeah, thank you for having me on, Justin. Excited to talk and see where this conversation takes us.
Yeah, awesome. How are you doing with everything going on? Like, have you recovered well from the marathon you did in December?
Yeah, I typically recover pretty quickly, so I'm feeling pretty good now, you know, just taking a few weeks easy, just getting back into running. But yeah, I'm feeling good and just kind of ready for whatever's next. I mean, no one really knows what's next in this kind of climate we've been in for the past 9 months or so, but yeah, we'll just kind of see how things go.
When you first heard about like the pandemic and everything going on, like it's a distant thing right now. Like it's hard to say, it's crazy to say that we've already been through it like 9 months or this as long as we have. But what were your initial thoughts like in terms of your training and how you would proceed with the year that was 2020?
Yeah, it is funny. I remember so I'm a community college coach for cross country and track. And I think it was the week after the Olympic trial. So maybe that first week of March, like March 8th or somewhere around there, we were driving back from a meet and, you know, COVID cases were just starting to pop up in America. And I remember one kid was like, oh, there's a reported COVID case in Madera, which is the town next to us. And it was like this crazy thing, like, you know, COVID is not just in China anymore. Like there's a person actually in California that has it. Like, and we were kind of joking about it. Like, and then literally the next week we're like debating if we're going to have this meet come up or not, or if we're going to be able to travel to another meet. And then the next day it's like, no, it's canceled. And then all of a sudden that one day cancellation has turned into like 10 months or wherever we're at now. So yeah, when it first happened, I mean, I wasn't really thinking about anything. And since I was in the coaching mode, you know, cause I had just finished the trials and I was moving into coaching and, you know, getting our athletes ready for track, I wasn't too concerned or really thinking about my own training and racing. I was just trying to get my kids to the next meet, you know, and, being able to have them compete. And I don't think anybody, well, I'm sure some did, but I didn't anticipate it being this long. So I wouldn't have even have thought to think of what am I going to do for the next 10 months to who knows how long we'll be in this. So yeah, that's kind of how it went for me. And, you know, now we've just kind of like everyone else, just taking things week by week and trying to make the most of it.
Yeah, for sure. Has it been difficult for you? And like, I know you're a teacher and a coach and also an athlete, you know, what's the distribution of all those things in your life? Where's the balance? And like, has it been difficult in one area more particular than another?
I mean, fortunately, I think I've had some things personally that have made this time, you know, go pretty well. So after the trials, I signed a contract with Brooks Running. So that was a huge blessing in my life, you know, to be able to have that. And then I had recently, or actually that week too, basically the same week I got hired on full time. So I had been a part time professor and coach, and then now I was a full time. So that was another huge blessing. My wife ended up graduating from nursing school and over the summer got a nursing job. So that's another huge step of life. We bought a house and we're able to move out of our parents' house and have our own place. So there was a lot of just really, I mean, just awesome things that happened to my wife and I. So it's been a little weird because it's been this kind of terrible time. But for me personally, like it's been a really good time. And so kind of balancing that has been a little weird because it's like I am so happy. Like I'm so grateful for what I have. But then also it's like, you know, I know life sucks for a lot of people. And a lot of people close to me, like all of our athletes that weren't able to compete, you know, this last track season and then now into this cross country season. And then now even moving on to this track season, it doesn't look like we have a lot going on. And it's just, you know, it's frustrating when you're trying to keep athletes motivated and, you know, getting the best out of them. But it's like there's like nothing to train for. So what's the point? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's been frustrating. You know, personally, for my own running, I'm sure we'll talk about some of the stuff I've done this fall. So I keep myself entertained. I think that just kind of comes naturally for me. And I'm lucky in that way that I've been able to entertain myself despite the lack of opportunities that we normally have in a typical year. So, yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, but personally, I've been very, very fortunate. So, yeah.
So when we look back at the trials, like how grateful were you for that kind of experience based on, you know, we don't know when we're going to be able to race again, like not like the marathon project, which was a pretty cool event, but an event like that.
Yeah. I mean, looking back at the Olympic trials, I mean, it's pretty crazy. It could have been 10 days later and we wouldn't have had it. And then, you know, I definitely wouldn't have a sponsorship with Brooks if it hadn't been for that race. You know, and I'm sure I'd be running still, but it would just be a lot different if that race hadn't happened. So, yeah, I mean, I got really lucky that they just went, for whatever reason, the organizers had it on February 28th and 29th. And yeah, it very easily could have not happened. But yeah, I mean, that race was just great. I had I knew that I could run fast and kind of run with the top guys in the nation, but I just never had in the past. Like even at times when I felt like I should be one of the best, I just really wasn't ever even that close. And so to actually do it and to be seventh in the nation was just an incredible feeling. And just kind of like, you know, validated my kind of ambitious thoughts. It was like, no, these are real thoughts. Like this actually just happened. So yeah, the trials, I mean, and it was an amazing experience too. One of the best meets I've ever been a part of, just as far as the organization, how it was put on. I mean, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, for sure. And what a performance too, coming in seventh, and like seventh in the nation is like, it was so fun to watch for all of us. And especially with all the uncertainty, like leading, you know, we were in an uncertain time, like you say, and the timing of the race was actually perfect. Do you know what the difference was, or like, you know, to have a performance like that, but like never run with the top guys, like you were saying, you know, there's a certain level of like uncertainty. So like, how did you like just let yourself go and have what you say is one of your best races ever?
Going into it, I think I just wanted to run and just take advantage of the course, I guess. And so for me, I really enjoyed downhill running and I think I'm good at it. So I didn't want to going into the race, I'm just like, I'm just going to run the downhills and I'm not going to hold back on them because that's really the only shot that I have. So at the beginning of the race, it was basically me and Luke Piscadra. He was out front and I went with him because that was the downhill section and I didn't know what the rest of the field was going to do. And I didn't want to kind of hold back and run like, you know, 5.0 or 5.10 pace because that wasn't going to help me. So I just let myself go on the downhills and ran with him. And that got me engaged in the race. And then from that point on, I mean, the race was pretty quick the whole time. The uphills were a little bit of a challenge for me, but then I could always get back with the pack or get up to the next pack on the downhills. So yeah, that was just my strategy, was just to run the downhills well and not hold back and then just maintain and do what I can to stick with the pack on the uphills. And then just keep running. You know, the marathon is one of those which, like, if you just maintain your pace, you're gonna do well. And so when I kind of got – I was kind of broken up – about 20 miles in and was in about between 18th to 20th place. And I didn't do anything special. I just kept running. And then I ended up in seventh place, which I knew would happen if I just, you know, did what I did in every long run, you know, that I did in the past. You just keep running. And since I do a marathon all the time in training, I knew I just had to just finish it like I finish all my training runs. And it wasn't good enough to be top three. You know, I would have had to run the middle of the race a lot better, but, you know, it was good enough for seventh on that day.
For sure. So you run a marathon in every marathon build?
Yeah, I run many marathons. most of my long runs are, you know, a marathon or more. I'd have to go back in my training log and see how many more I did. But I mean, the last 10 weeks, the majority of my long runs were over 26 miles.
Okay. What's that?
Most of them are around like 26 to 30.
Okay. Cause typically, like, I'm just thinking like for myself and training plans and stuff like that, I've got like, you're not running that much, you know, distance. So like, where did you, like, are you coaching yourself? Are you coached by somebody or? Where did you come up with that and why does it work for you?
Yeah, I'm coaching myself. If we didn't have GPS, you know, we just run by time. And so if you said, oh, I do like, you know, a couple 2 hour and 30 minute runs or 2 hour and 40 minute runs, I don't think it would sound all that crazy. And that's really what I do. It just so happens that if I run, you know, for 2.5 hours, it's, you know, 28 miles. Whereas, you know, for other people it's 20 miles and then that's totally normal. So I just at some point, I don't think that like, it's just, yeah, it's just not that long. in a sense, especially time-wise. So I don't know. I mean, the first marathon I trained for, I did either a 30 or 31 mile run in preparation for it. And I don't know, it just seemed normal to me to do. So, and I also didn't do that. And I had ran a marathon before. Yeah. I ran a marathon and the next week or 2 weeks after I did like 30 or 31 miles. Yeah. And that was for my first one. So I don't know. I've just always done that. And I mean, there's definitely a limit to where it's not always like more is better, and not everyone can do these types of runs, and at some points in my buildups or for certain races, you know, maybe I could have overdone it. But I think the majority of elites should be running more than 25 miles a handful of times. I can't really say that until I like get the American record or something, but. I'll definitely be writing some books, I guess.
Exactly. You're changing the training plans for the next 25 years. But I used to do that too. Like when I first started, I didn't know any better. I was running like a half marathon the weekend before my half marathon, you know? I didn't know any better. I just wanted to know what it felt like. So that's why I'm curious. I was just curious about why you do it. But for me, it was like just the feeling of running that distance. So you're not like, it's not like fear of the unknown kind of thing. But yeah, that was just me. I always bring it back. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, for people that are training for their first one, I mean, it's a lot, it's different because you, like at this point, it's just part of it's a part of my normal training. But it's not a good idea to just, see if you can do something right before you have to go race it. That's not always a great strategy, but
yeah, exactly. I appreciate that. And for some of our listeners, like not at your level. So yeah, it's not the best idea, but, I always like to bring it back to the beginning and kind of see, you know, how you grew up, where you grew up, where the interest for running or the love of running came in, and see where that leads us.
Yeah, I grew up in Fresno, California, which is where I'm at now. So in the United States here. And my dad was a basketball coach. So I grew up playing basketball and pretty much doing every sport that you could, you know, soccer, baseball, wrestling. I actually never played tackle football, flag football. And then cross country and track. So I got into running in fourth grade, and I just loved it. I was super competitive. So, you know, the first day of practice, I had to beat everybody, even though, you know, you're not supposed to race every practice. I had to, you know, cause no one else could finish in front of me in anything. So that's just kind of how it was. I really loved running and winning. The combination of that was just, you know, great. And that's what cross country is, running and trying to win. So, I've been running ever since then. I continued with other sports, and slowly kind of trickled it down to by my sophomore year, I was just running. And then I went to college at Arizona State, and ran there for 5 years. And then, you know, now I'm still here continuing running.
So where did that competitive nature come from?
A combination of nature and nurture. I think I just was born competitive just in my genetics, just have that personality, but definitely was also just raised that way. When you have a dad that's a coach, he's not a coach to lose. He's a coach to win. So you're just raised like trying to figure out how to win. So I, in our family, like you try to win at everything, and that's the fun. Like when you say you're going to play for fun, the fun comes in trying to win. And winning is a lot of fun, and losing sucks and it's not fun, but it still is fun. Cause you're pursuing to try to win. So yeah, I've just always been that way. I'm not like crazy. Hopefully I'm not a poor sport, but I used to, when I was younger, I'm sure my yeah, my grandparents said I was a poor sport and stuff, but I think that's just because I beat them a lot.
You beat your grandparents.
So, I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, to some degree, I think when you're young, you should be a little bit of a poor sport because you should hate losing. And then you learn how to manage your feelings. So I kind of hope that my kids, you know, are a little pissed off when they lose and get upset and maybe throw some toys or whatever. And then we learn how to manage that and how to turn that into, okay, like, let's, you know, be respectful, but let's use this drive to figure out how to be better and how to win next time, so we're not losers.
Yeah, for sure. And how did you deal with defeat? Like, you faced that in your career, I'm sure, all the time. But, you know, at a young age, like, how did you cope with losing without, you know, throwing a tantrum or anything like that?
Actually, honestly, I've never thought about it. But as you say that, I think maybe a big reason of it was my dad never let me win at anything. So, you know, growing up, I lost every single day because I'd play with my dad anything. I remember we used to play Clue, this board game. I lost every single time we played. Later, I found out it's because apparently my brother and I would show my dad the card so he could easily win. But, but yeah, we'd play basketball, you know, and when you're 6 years old and he's 6'4", you know, you're never going to win. So I lost every day, and I'm sure that helped me just because, you know, you get beat down. And, I mean, I'm sure my dad let me score some points now and then, but yeah, I mean, I think there was just, and yeah, I mean, I just played so many sports, you're just bound to lose. And so if you play enough games, you're going to lose a lot of games. So I guess you just get used to it. But also, I mean, I always had great coaches and good parents. So like, if I had any inappropriate behavior or didn't react accordingly, I don't really remember, but I'm sure they taught me from a young age how to, you know, just not be a poor sport. And like, you know, they kind of, you know, trained me out of that really quick. So, yeah, I think I was trained at such a young age to be a respectful loser, still be motivated to win, but, you know, but respect the game, that I don't even really remember figuring out what to do when I got older. I think it became more internal, especially with running. You know, runners don't like, there's a few, but most runners aren't like throwing hissy fits at the end of races. Most of it is internal, and you kind of go off into your corner, or you go on your cool down and kind of isolate. And then you just have all this internal chatter. And so I did struggle with that a little bit. You know, I went through some periods of my life where I just was really struggling in running and was not doing well at all. And was getting slower and just getting beat badly by people that had never beaten me before. And there was like a lot of mental just struggles. Like, why the heck am I running slow? Like, I the drive's still there. I want to be good. I'm training hard. So yeah, it definitely wore on me mentally. And I had to learn to just to stay driven and motivated, but also just not accept the defeat, but just learn how to like continue with my life despite it, you know, and hope that I'd figure it out at some point, which I guess I did, but at the time I didn't know if I ever would.
So how do you, yeah. So that's a challenging thing when you're not getting better, you're getting beat by people that you used to beat. Like, who did you work through that on your own? Was it a coach that helped you through? Like, what was the breaking point there, or like, was it way later on that you discovered, and like, maybe why did you stick with it?
I always had good coaches. So when I did struggle, my coaches were always very supportive and just kind of believed in me that I would be great at some point. And they just always reaffirmed, like, you know, who I was as a person, you know, even outside of just running performances. And then, you know, I guess looking back, there could have been reasons that I quit. And I guess some people in my position would have. But it was also hard to quit. I mean, when you're on a scholarship, the financial incentive to not quit is very high. Even though I felt bad about having a scholarship when I wasn't performing well, that, you know, that weighed heavy on me. But I also, I couldn't afford to not have the scholarship. So yeah, that was one thing that I, you know, realistically kept me in it. But I also never seriously thought about quitting either. I don't know. There was some part of me that always thought, or knew even, that I would eventually be good again and even better than I was when I had the most, like, be more successful than I ever was in the past. So, and I don't really know why I had that, but I just always felt like that. So I just, yeah, I just, you just kind of stuck with it, and you don't know when you're going to get out of the tunnel, but if you just keep walking, eventually you get out.
Mm-hmm. And were you like, were you changing anything in your training, or were you like, you know, how did
I tried, I'm an experimenter. People that follow my training clearly probably figure that out. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I tried everything. You know, my coaches and I, we got like every test in the book, you know, blood test, thyroid test, you know, all the stuff. Do I have mono? You know, all these things that I didn't even have symptoms for. And I mean, really nothing worked. I tried different mental strategies. Yeah, trying to tinker with training. At the end of the day, I don't know why I got better when I got better. It just, I'd assume there was some sort of like stress. I was out of whack in some sort of thing, but even my cortisol levels weren't really out of line, or, you know, out of range that much. So physiologic, like, I don't know. There was no answer I could give you as to what happened or what I changed. I just kind of kept going, and eventually things clicked, and it didn't click all at once, but, you know, over the years, it just slowly got better. And then now I'm in the marathon, which I think is a little bit more suitable to my skills. And now I'm having success.
Mm. Yeah. Cause you still ran a hell of a 5K in college at 13:50, which is insane. You said like you had good parents and good coaches. Like, was the sport the emphasis for you, or did they always emphasize like getting a good education?
Yeah, there's always a combination. I mean, yeah, again, my dad being a basketball coach, achieving things athletically, you know, was always important. But, you know, achieving things academically was equally important. I mean, both my brother and I got, you know, good grades, and just getting A's was just expected. Not because like you just had to get A's or you're a terrible person, but just because, you know, we felt like we had the right environment and enough genetic help to achieve those higher grades. And so if you can achieve them, then you should, was kind of, I guess, that was never explicitly said, but looking back, like that's kind of the mindset. It's like, achieve what you can, you know, and so just do it. And so, yeah, so that was always an emphasis. And both my parents were teachers. Yeah, gosh, we have so many people in the family that are in education. So, you know, from a young age, you know, my parents were always reading to me. I was reading, doing educational stuff. I remember I used to play these like video games that weren't actually video games. Now that I think about it, they were like math games. And I don't even know, like, I remember loving playing them, but now thinking back, they were just games that were fun, I guess. So yeah, I was like tricked into, you know, valuing education, which I'm very thankful for, because not everyone, you know, is raised like that or gets those opportunities. And, you know, so yeah, I'm fortunate and hope to provide my children with those opportunities. And then, As a teacher at a community college, I'm teaching people that are coming from super diverse backgrounds and that didn't necessarily have that. So trying to adapt my teaching style to recognize, you know, that not everyone is coming from that, and figuring out how to make the best learning environment for everybody.
Mm. Yeah, it's nice that you can like pay it forward to those kids too, right? So yeah, that's awesome. Did you always know you wanted to be a teacher? Were you kind of influenced by your family a little bit?
So going into college, my plan was to major in marketing and exercise science. I ended up dropping marketing the first semester because I was like, I really don't want to do this. So I just went into exercise science. And then a few years later, I had done some camps and I just realized that I think I'd really like coaching just because I enjoyed working with younger athletes and kind of mentoring them and, you know, that coaching side. So then I just decided that I wanted to be a coach. And then along with that is a teacher. So I got my master's in physical education, and that program also came with a teaching credential. So it was kind of a perfect program for me because it allowed me to get my K-12 teaching credential, and then the master's allowed me to do things at the college level. So, I got lucky because there's not tons of colleges that have those combined master's and credentialing programs. But I just happened to, I happened to be at a college that had it at the time, and I was able to get it done within my 5 years of, eligibility because I'd redshirted a year. So it worked out pretty good.
Nice. Did you, like you talked about like winning and straight A's, what other like maybe your competitiveness, maybe that's what drives you to those to succeed, is there any other aspects of your life where that's the case as well?
I think anything you're trying to do, anything that you're trying to do, I think you want to try to do it well. I guess there's things I'm mediocre at, like I'm very mediocre or below average at like being clean and picking up things. I don't know. My wife could list a whole lot of things I'm not very good at. I think like things that like I really dive into, it's hard for me to not, like I have to put a lot of energy into it. So like coaching, running, and teaching and school have always been big things that's like you want. I don't know how to answer it, but here's an example. Like I got a few student surveys back that I was just, they're anonymous, but I was reading over them and like, having the few like kind of more negative ones, like just really bothered me, like, and almost like, okay, this semester, like I got to change these things. I got to get better. Like, you're always going to have negative comments, but just, I want my class to be as good as it can. Cause it's just, I don't know. I can't, I mean, who wants to be mediocre at stuff? It's just, does anyone really want that?
Yeah. Like I want to be the best podcaster I can be, So
yeah, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm 650th in the podcast world. That's great. I'm
Yeah, exactly. So no, but it's cool. Why I'm asking these questions is I like to tap into that like excellence, that's like, seems like that you're going after. And it's like, you're easy to talk to but you have this drive to succeed, and like what you've accomplished this year has been like remarkable, and like we'll talk about those things, but like, yeah, just like kind of getting into that mindset of, what are the steps that you can make to be great? It's a very general question, but maybe you have like an answer to that.
No, how can you be great? there's a lot of books that I haven't read that probably answer the question pretty well. there's totally different ways. And I think people are motivated by different things. So my answer isn't going to be, it's not going to relate to everybody. And what I'm motivated by, like you may not care about at all. So you just have to figure out like what motivates you. And I guess like what you want out of life. Cause like achieving things like, and having success, like obviously like I naturally want to do that. But at the end of the day, like sometimes it's like your success or things you achieve, like, do they really even matter? And so you kind of have to decide like who's the person you want to be? Like, what do you want to achieve in life based on, like, you know, when you die, like, I don't know, your life purpose, I guess, in a cliche way of saying it. But, so once you kind of figure that out, then other things like fall into place. And then you also just have like your natural personality. And that can either hinder you or like, you know, push you to exceed. And you kind of have to distinguish like what aspects of my personality are hindering me. Like for me, if I don't have a schedule, then like if I have the chance to do nothing, then I'm going to do nothing. Whereas other people, like they can have nothing on their schedule for weeks and they will not have a moment where they just do nothing. Like that's just not their personality. But for me, if I can just sit on the couch, I'm going to sit on the couch and I'm not going to do a dang thing. that sometimes is good. You know, I can relax and recover if I, you know, but in this COVID time, like, sometimes I can just sit on the couch and eat when I really shouldn't be. And so, yeah, you have to analyze your personality. But then, yeah, being motivated, I don't know. I guess I just see the opportunities. So, like, being good in running, for example. One, I just love it. So I just naturally want to be good. And a lot of it's internal. And it's just, I was just born like that. But two, I also see the opportunities that I get from running fast. Like just all the people I get to meet and all, like I'm talking to you right now and people are going to listen to this. And like, I mean, like if I wasn't running fast, like I wouldn't be having this conversation. That's just how it is. And I've met so many wonderful people in my life. My wife, I met through running. We ran together, in college at Arizona State. You know, my job, literally my job, all the 18 to 22 year olds that I interact with, like that I get to be a part of their lives. That's all because of running and, you know, pursuing excellence, I guess, as you put it. So it just like, and those are, that's like the really important part of life is just like relationships with people and impacting each other's lives. And I'm able to do that like through running. And the more that I can have success in running, the more opportunities there's going to be for that. And ultimately that's going to make my life more fulfilling is because I'm going to have those full relationships. And I'm also like, I'm just not great at making friends, I guess, or like, not that I'm, like it's hard for me to just go up to new people and just like create friendships out of, you know, nothing. Like I'm not, if I'm at a gathering, like I'm not going to go up and start talking to people. It's just not my personality. I'm not shy. I'm just, it's just hard for me to talk like when I don't know the person or even when I do know the person, but
you're doing all right now. So,
well, yeah, we have topics. I'm good with topics, but like if we were just like taking a bus together, like I wouldn't talk to you. Yeah. I would talk to you, yeah, for sure. And I'd answer your questions, but
yeah, I
wouldn't initiate anything. So gotcha. Running for me gives me such a great opportunity like this. Like I can share and you probably think I'm a open person and, you know, pretty talkative or whatever, but running's given me that opportunity to like display my personality and create more meaningful relationships. And so that's like, that's one thing that drives me. It's like, it's just, I've been so blessed, and had so many amazing opportunities that, you know, I want to continue it. You know, and I just want to win, you know, there's both. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that, man. There's so much more to it than running fast. You know, there's so much more, like you said, and even for me, like getting involved, like I was running alone for a while and then got introduced to the community here in Montreal, and it's just a wonderful community. You meet people from all different levels and, not running as fast as you, but you know, it has opened up, like it brought me here to hosting this show, you know? So, that really kind of hits home with me for sure. And, yeah, it's, Like where, like what's going to be your legacy at the end of the day? You know, like what are people going to remember you for? Actually, I'll ask you that question. I was going to save it for the end, but like, what do you want to be remembered for when your career is all over?
Let's see. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a tough question to answer. I think it's hard. I feel like the external perspectives, like you never really know what people think of you. And so I think for me, it's more just like the one-on-one personal relationships. I just want people to know that I care about them and love them and want the best for them. I think my personal beliefs, like I'm a Christian, so I believe in God and Jesus. And so I believe that like we are all created and that like God loves all of us, and it doesn't always feel that way in the world. I mean, it's just a crazy complex interaction of good and evil that we live in. And so it's hard to believe that sometimes that there is a God that loves you or that people love you. And it's, so I just want to be, I don't know, if no one's experienced that before, I at least want to be a person that like, okay, like at least this person cares about me, and loves me. And I think like to some degree, I am a selfish person and a little bit. So it's like, I don't always do that. And that frustrates me because it's like, that's not the person I want to be or the person I want to portray myself as. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, especially now, this past year, the world has been hard. And I don't know. I just want, I want people to, I don't know, have some type of hope, and just have hope in each other that like people care for each other. So if I can play a role in that, then I will.
Great, man. That's awesome. You mentioned that you got the sponsorship with Brooks after the trials. Did you go in with no sponsor?
So I was with Brooks. So Brooks had this Hometown Heroes program where they basically took people that had qualified for the trials, but that, you know, weren't necessarily good enough to have, you know, a contract. So like I had run like 217 when I first entered into this program with them. So we got like gear and, you know, had some opportunities for bonuses, but they basically just provided us support leading up to the trials. And so I had had a relationship with them, but leading into the trials. And so I was wearing, you know, I was wearing all Brooks stuff, you know, and their new their carbon shoes at the time. So I had had a relationship with them and then just continued with it afterwards.
Nice. And so like, did you always think, like, I know you had a plan for your education, but did you always think you were going to go pro in running after school?
I did when I was younger, you know, when I was like a kid. Actually, I never really thought about going pro, but I like thought like, oh, I'm going to run in the Olympics or, you know, do these big races.
Okay.
I never really thought of it as a profession, I guess, when I was, because I don't know, when you're like 10, you don't really see professional runners as much. You kind of, you know, you see the NBA and NFL, but you don't think of like running as like a sole profession, which it's not even my sole profession now. Yeah. And then as I got older, especially in college, it was like, okay, me being a professional runner just isn't realistic. I mean, I can, on my best day, I score in the Pac-12 a couple points, but that's about it. I made one national meet in the steeplechase, but you know, that was it. And so, yeah, I mean, I just wasn't good enough to be a professional. Yeah. And then now I'm here. I mean, it's kind of crazy how it happened, but, yeah. So it's kind of like,
No. And then you were all of a sudden, right? So like, what did that look like? Like, how did you go from 5K steeplechase guy to this marathon man?
It was natural. After I graduated from college, I just was a normal person and ran for fun and, you know, worked And then I just was just like a normal person. I was like, hey, I want to run a marathon. So I started training for a marathon. And then I qualified for the Olympic trials in that marathon. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm a marathoner now. my personality is just, I like to do things to the extreme. I might as well just tell fun stories. When I was in high school, like sometimes I'd just go on like long runs. I'd do some like 18 mile runs. I didn't run too much in high. That was more like towards the end of my senior year. But I used to wake up at like 5 a.m., go to my friend's house in the fall. So it was cold. I'd lift and then I'd go pool run in like November when it was like 35 degrees in the morning, and I'd hop in his pool and pool run. Just, I don't even know why, just to be tough, I guess. And then I got him to do it, and I would just always like do different random training stuff. And then in college, like my freshman year after the season ended, I went out and ran a marathon, just around the streets of Arizona. And then I did like, my senior year, and then the year after that, I did like a 30 mile run and a 32 mile run just purely for fun. And I wasn't taking in any fuel or any water at the time. And I was still averaging about 6 minute pace. And so I think I just always had the mindset to be a marathoner. I just didn't know it yet.
Was that, so that that was an internal thing? No one, like, so you've done this on your own. No one told you to do this. Like, you just decided that that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, no, definitely no one told me it. I just always like to do stuff. I remember the first time I ran 30 miles was after the cross country season. My wife we got married in college. So this was the first year we were married. My wife went out of town for like, I don't remember why she left, but I was just bored. So it was about 3.5 hours before class. And I was like, okay, if I average 6 minute pace, I can run 30 miles in 3 hours and still make it to class. So that's literally what I did. And I don't think I anticipated how much my legs would hurt because I had to bike to class afterwards. So like when you're running, you feel fine. And then you stop and you're like, oh my gosh, my legs like physically hurt. Like there's this pain that I can't describe. And then I had to walk up the stairs and I'm just like crawling up the stairs. I don't even think I showered, to be honest. Which is totally just me. But then I think I put on some deodorant or whatever, and then crawled back down the stairs, got on my bike and drove there. I think I was a little late to class, but it was just like those, that's just the things I do. And then, yeah, the next year she went out of town at the exact same time. And I don't know. But, and then I was like, well, I got to run 32 miles. So I added on because I had to do more than I did last time. Because that's, again, that's my personality. And so, yeah, 32 miles. And yeah, at the time I had never practiced fueling. So I didn't drink any water. I didn't have anything. And in Arizona, like it's always pretty hot. So I also used to run in like full, like tights, sweatshirts, and then these like insulated sweatsuits when it was like 100 degrees.
Holy shit.
You know, why not? And then when I graduated, I would substitute teach, and I didn't want to wait run before. So I'd wait when I'd get home around 3:30 or 4, whenever I thought it'd be the exact hottest, I'd go out and run as hard as I could. And it'd be like about 113 degrees. And then, yeah, I just enjoyed doing things to the extreme. It was more fun for me that way.
Wow. So I guess you're no stranger to the heat and it doesn't bother you really?
Oh, I love the heat. I just got these heat lamps. It's kind of like infrared saunas, the same lamps that they use. So I made my own sauna. But, well, I didn't really make it. My brother-in-law did. The majority of it, I just kind of observed and helped. He's an engineer and he's way better. I pretended to help. I really didn't do anything. So.
Hammer or something.
I consulted, I guess. But yeah, so we have this basically a big box that I put a bunch of heat lamps in. And then I hooked some lamps up to my treadmill. I just got all this stuff like a few days ago. And then, so I've been experimenting with heat training and my homemade saunas. And there's a lot of benefits to the heat, which is great because I love the heat. So I also got an altitude. So now I'm experimenting with altitude and playing around with that and trying to make my oxygen saturation go really low and holding my breath and scaring my wife by getting my oxygen saturation to like 70. So she's like, yeah, when we have patients drop down in the 70s, it's like we hit the code. Like it's, so yeah, but that's what I'm doing.
So you're doing this in, this is all experimental right now, or you're trying to simulate what it feels like to be at altitude and you're to make improvements in your training, or what's the method to this madness?
Yeah, it's calculated experimentation. So, obviously there's tons of studies on altitude. There's tons of studies on heat and heat stress. I mean, like thousands and thousands. So it's not like I'm just like creating this whole type of new training. It's like this stuff is, but I am experimenting like what, you know, I can do with it. So like altitude, for example, most of the studies are like, okay, you go up to 7,000 feet and you're there for like 4 weeks and do this training. Whereas I'm looking at like, okay, what's my oxygen saturation? Like, it doesn't really matter what altitude you're at. Like, what's your internal load? So what effect is it having on my body? And then, because that's going to be your stimulus, and then your body adapts to that stimulus, or you hope it adapts, and then that's how you get better. So, yeah. So after a few weeks, you know, hopefully like 12,000 feet will, you know, put me at 90 to 92%, and then you keep increasing until eventually you kind of plateau. But so yeah, I'm experimenting with different things like that, and then different exposures to heat. I have like all this research like to work with, and then I'm kind of like now picking some of the lesser studied areas and applying it to myself to see, you know, what benefits I can get. And so it's fun. I mean, some of it is just pure fun and experimentation. But obviously there's a lot of good science like that it can be beneficial for training and for physical performance, training and racing as well. So it's both. It's fun and technically work because it's my job, I guess.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. Because you do all these like crazy workouts and stuff like that, like do you put that in every block, or is every training block totally different because you think of different ideas, or like how does that work? How can you predict that you'll have just as good a performance or better in your next event?
I just assume I'm going to run good. your body is like pretty good at telling you what it feels. I mean, you know, like mileage, for example, like you kind of just, for the most part, you kind of just do as much mileage as you can do. That's like, honestly, the easiest marathon philosophy is just run as many miles as you can. As long as you have quality in there. But like your body tells you when it's too much, like either hopefully you catch it before it's an injury, but like sometimes like I'll be kind of pushing the envelope on the miles, and then it's just like, I'm just so tired, or like I'm grumpy, or I just don't want to run like at all, which you always have those days where you don't want to run. But I mean, it's like chronic, like every day is just like, no, I'm not doing any, like, I just don't like this. And so like your body is like telling you like, okay, this is too much, like we've crossed the line. And I mean sometimes it's hard, but like after you've run enough, like you learn how to like listen to your body. Like it's pretty good at talking to you, and that's why you have hormones and you have all these, your body has all these responses to communicate to your brain. You just have to like remotely listen sometimes. So yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Like I just listen to what I'm feeling. And so the training will look different. And then, you know, you can use that for like down the road the next time. Like, okay, like, so for this past block, for example, I was feeling pretty good. And then I was just doing like a little bit more like strides and things. And I think I get like a little like, obsessive about things, like especially as it gets close to a race. So I think I was just, I hadn't done a ton of speed work. And I mean, I had done a little bit of strides and some workouts, but not a ton. And then it was like, I was doing strides every day, even on my doubles, like twice a day. And I'm not for sure, but I tweaked my like lower calf. The lower like outside part of my calf. I think my soleus like on the Wednesday of race week. And so Thursday, I don't know if anyone noticed this on Strava, but they probably just thought I was tapering, but I wasn't. It was I ran like 3 miles on Thursday, and that's all I could do. It hurt. Like I was like, I can't even run. And then like the rest of the day, I could barely walk. And then like I didn't run Friday, and then I ran like a couple miles the day before the race, which I, you know, would have normally done. But yeah, I think I did. You know, it's like, so now I'm like, okay, when I want to add something new, like I still have to be like balanced. And so I can't just like that was a mistake. Just, I think I did literally just too many strides. And I think the ink, cause I was doing it on a, in my neighborhood, and there's a slight curve where I was doing these strides, which shouldn't be anything, but you know, any little slight things can just kind of throw you off. And I think I just kind of stepped weird and just tweaked it. I mean, obviously I was able to race, so it wasn't like I, you know, had anything major, but I just tweaked it enough to where it kind of threw me off, which obviously you don't want before you're entering a race. Mm-hmm. So it's just learning from things like that. Like, you know, and then I take that knowledge onto the, you know, onto the next training block.
So you're talking about your build to the marathon project. Was that it?
Yeah. So like, okay. Just like a few weeks ago.
But your November was also massive, right? Like the things you did in November, like I saw the list and I was like, what the hell? Like the 50.4K on the treadmill in 2:42. Then you ran a 50K official track, again, 2:42:30. So maybe you were like prepping for that on the treadmill. I'm not sure.
Well, okay. But like, that was one of those things where you're like, oh, I did the half marathon the week before just to see if I could do it. So I just wasn't, I don't know, this, you know, you're talking about motivation and stuff and the whole summer. It was hard to like train at a high level. And honestly, I really didn't train that well for a while. And then basically 2 weeks before the 50K, I'm like, okay. I mean, I had done some good training, but not like what I would consider to be a high level training. And so then I kind of got like serious like 2 weeks before. And then I really don't know why I ran 50K on the treadmill, but it was just kind of like I just started running. And then I was like, okay, well, let's just see if I can do it, I guess. I know that I would recover well. Like recovery is never really a concern for me because I have enough experience doing mileage and long runs that I know how my body recovers. So I you know, not everyone can do that, I guess, but I knew myself. So I just, yeah, it was kind of one of those things. Like, I just kind of want to see if I can do it because the week before I had done a run and I did not feel in good shape. So it was definitely a confidence booster. And then, yeah, I was able to run the 50K and get the record. So I guess it worked.
Yeah. That's awesome. Congrats, man. Like that's
thanks.
Crazy good. Yeah. And then after that end of the month, you know, another treadmill run in 2:09:58. So a 2:09 marathon, which is absolutely huge. Like I said, like treadmill is tough for me to run an hour and you're crushing marathons on there. When did you find out about the marathon project? Like, when did you find out that was going to be an opportunity and like, was it a no-brainer for you?
Oh yeah, it was definitely a no-brainer to do it. I don't turn down a lot of races. I'm trying to actually look back at my email to see if I can see when they sent it. I don't remember. We had talked about it in the summer. There were some guys on Instagram. I think Scott Fauble led that, just letting us know, like, we want to get something together, like, who'd be interested. And pretty much everyone was like, I'm interested. We want to race. So they worked on it for, a while. I think maybe in September or October, they let us know for sure that it'd be happening. And I had already had the 50K scheduled when we officially knew. And then, so it was sometime around September or October. And then, and then we went from there. But yeah, there was never any hesitation. I wanted to race. And I mean, it's pretty much any race I can do, I do.
So what was that event like for you? And like, what were your expectations going into it?
I was super excited to go into it. And then it was, yeah. So that little like Nick kind of injury I was talking about, it's just hard for me to like, so in the past when I've had things like that, I just like, I can't let it go. Like I can't get it out of my head. I like have to constantly like tinker with myself to like make sure I'm feeling good. So I was just like, okay, like there's really no pressure for this race. It's just like, it's just, we just created a race for something to do because we all have nothing. Like there's been nothing. So it's just like, you know, it's just a great race. So I was like, okay, this is a perfect opportunity, like to just learn how to deal with this. Cause this is probably going to happen at some point in your career in like an Olympic trials or an Olympics or Boston or something. So I was just trying to like manage my emotional or my mental obsessiveness and just like, just trying not to think, cause I knew I was going to be able to race and I knew I was going to run and it wasn't going to bother me. So I'm just like, I just have to manage these next 3 days and not drive myself crazy. Cause that's just how I am. I'm, you know, I'll just drive myself nuts. So, I'd like to say that I just put it out of my head and I was just completely fine. But, you know, I did have some, I did handle it, I think, pretty well. And I didn't let it get to me, but it did, like, it was hard for me to like, talk about the race, like post things like, oh, I'm racing this. Cause it was like, there was times where I was unsure I'd even actually get to the starting line. So I didn't want to like, kind of like be fake and post like, oh, so excited to race. Cause it's like, what if I don't even show up to the line? Like Bekele was like, like, dude, you know, you're not going to run. Like maybe you're holding out, like maybe you'll feel good, but I'm just like, not going to do that. So to preface it, we had like a press conference on Wednesday. I actually tweaked it like 2 hours after the press conference. So I'm not being hypocritical here. Like I didn't talk, I actually tweaked it after that. So, I don't know. Though that was in my head. And it was also weird because you like couldn't see anybody. I guess the people that were there could see people on your team, but like I wasn't with the team, so it was just me and my wife. I don't know. It was my last race was the Olympic trials, which was like crazy fun and exciting, and you're just surrounded by people the whole time. Just super fun. And then this was just like an amazing event, but it was kind of an isolated event, and I really wanted things to distract me from my calf, but there wasn't anything. I was just kind of in my room. I mean, it was nice having my wife there, but yeah, so the energy was just different. And I told my wife, I was just like, I love running. I love racing. I just want this to be fun. And the night before, I just felt really weird. I just was like, I don't like anything about this. It was just like weird, you know, sometimes you just have that, like for whatever reason, your mind is just in a off spot. So I was just like trying to like get myself into the mindset to where I run at my best. And then on race day, I think, and I felt good. And I got that joy when I finally got to warm up and I got to see the starting line. It was just like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And then I didn't have the race that I wanted. I PR'd, but it was pretty disappointing to be honest, just the race itself. I was never in contention to win. And it was like the first race in a really, really, like it was the first big race in a really, really long time, like since high school, that I actually felt like I should win, or at least be in contention to win. I mean, there was a lot of good guys, but and I really wasn't in contention to win. So it was just really disappointing, but I mean, it's still been a great year and it's definitely motivating for the future.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, that was, yeah, crazy. Like another great performance. It was fun to, tune in and watch too. And, you know, like you say, you don't have your day, but I like one of the things you say is like, make your bad day average, which is like, how'd you come up with that? And how did you like implement it like on that day?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just make up sayings. Yeah, I say running is easy and make your bad days average. I'm sure I'll be making up tons more stuff. I think it's because when you're coaching, you know, you'll just like start to give a speech and it's like you have nothing to like. You just start talking and then words come out and it's like, all right, I guess I'm going with this. Or when I'm doing a long run, you know, I'm always doing those long runs, so I'm just thinking of stuff, and so you just make up random phrases. But yeah, I mean, that is a phrase that has really helped me, just because I did go through a lot of like challenging times running, just like, you know, just having bad workouts and bad races. And then once I became a coach, I'm like, okay, this is like, to have a good team performance, like you just need everyone to do average. Like that's all you need in life. I mean, most of what we do, like if everyone just, you know, if everyone just did their jobs and at least was average, like, you know, things would go pretty well. Again, I'm against mediocrity, but like, you know, sometimes for the most part, like you got to be average because that's the definition of average. So yeah, I just, what was it? Oh yeah. When I started training for the marathon, I remember just thinking like the marathon's a race where like you just can't blow up. Cause like you watch, I just seen so many like guys like watching their splits and it's like, they just run like 6 minute pace the last like 4 miles. It's like, why? So I'm like, okay, in training, all you have to do is just, when things aren't going well, you just have to like, just revert back to average and just, you know, run 5:10 pace, you know, and if you finish at 5:10 pace, like you lose maybe 30 seconds, but you still ran pretty good. So, and then coaching wise, it's like, that's what I tell my athletes, like, just don't be that guy that loses 100 spots in the last mile. Like you may not PR, but just get to the line and like maybe you lost 10 points. That's fine. Like we can live with that because some other guy ran great and made up 20 points. But if you lose 100 points, there's nothing we can do. So, yeah, so that's just what I've always said. And then in the marathon, especially this one, I mean, I remember I watched it back on tape and Dez at one point said, yeah, it's going to be like a tough day for him, for Albertson, for me, because I fell off at like mile 9 or something. And that's a long way to run by yourself. But I mean, I guess I did make it average. I mean, I had a PR and was 10th, and like instead of running like 220 or something ridiculous, I had a PR even though I ran by myself pretty much the whole race. So
it's something to be proud of for sure. It's like, that makes total sense too, because so many times, like, you're right, we give up on our paces and we throw in the towel and we say it's not going to be what we wanted, you know. But if you just revert to average, like you're saying, then you turn, like, that could be a really bad time, or it could be like a little bit better than what it was, you know, so, yeah. Or what it could have been. So yeah, that's pretty good. And I like the other one, running is easy, you know, that's kind of a cool fight.
I think I want to make sure running is easy shirts.
You should. I'd buy one for sure.
Well, I think I'll bring it up with Brooks, cause they have the whole run happy thing. And like the running is easy with a run happy smile is like, that's like my dream shirt. I'd buy that. Okay, so if I get a shirt I like, I wear it every single day, and my wife can attest this. I wear the same. I've been wearing the same pair of sweats, these joggers, I guess they're called, little tapered things. I've worn them every day probably since sometime in December, whenever it got cold. Just because, like, if you have, because I feel like you have to have your favorite thing, like. There's something you like more than another. So why would I wear my second favorite comfortable sweats if I could wear my first favorite?
Of course. And
especially when you're wearing around the house, like I'm not running in these sweats, so they don't need to be washed like more than once a month, you know.
That, there you go. That makes sense, so. That makes total sense, man. I definitely agree with that 100%. It's like when you get that new pair that you like, you got to throw out the other stuff because you're never going to wear it again. I have way too many clothes for them. That's for another day. So what other marathon do you want to, like, you listed off a bunch, like the Olympics, you mentioned Boston. What other races, like, what's your dream event?
I mean, there's some, I want to do all of them really. yeah, like right now it's hard. Like I was running and, I was doing some hill sprints yesterday. I'm like, man, I want to like try to make the trials in the steeplechase because I ran the steeplechase in college. And I just felt like I never achieved anywhere close to what I could have in the steeple. And it just kind of bugs me. But then I'm like, well, I kind of want to run the 10K too, because I never ran a 10K in college. And I've really never truly raced a 10K on the track. I paced it once. So I'm like, well, I want to run a 10K too. And then I'm like, but I also want to do Comrades. And that's in June. But that's a whole, that's a 55 mile, you know, downhill ultra race, totally different from a 3K steeple. And then, yeah, I want to do marathon. Like it's, I kind of want to do everything. So just figuring out when I'm going to do what is, I don't really know yet, but, I don't know. We'll see, but I do, I mean, I'm definitely going to work on my speed regardless of what I do, but I don't know racing yet what it'll be.
Where do you find, where do you feel like your greatest potential is?
I mean, I feel like my greatest, like worldwide, like if I was to say, like, what are you going to be top five in the world in? It would be some sort of a ultra race, like a, between like a 50 mile to 100K road race. But I mean, there's not as much financial incentive to do that. So it's like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters, but that'll just have to be at a different time in my career. But I also really want to do that. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the American record right now in the marathon seems achievable. I don't know why. I just, for some reason, getting beat by a bunch of people at the Marathon Project just made the American record seem totally attainable now. Even though it seems like it should be the opposite, like maybe I should be discouraged, or it just made it seem like 205 just isn't fast at all. Like it's four, it's barely, like I can see how I can run 450 pace and then it's just a couple seconds a mile faster than that. So, well, I mean, there's no reason not to get the American record. So there's just things like that, like things pop into my head and it seems like everything's realistic now, which I guess hasn't always been the case.
Yeah. When you feel like it's more in reach now, more like more than ever.
Yeah. I mean, like it, no, it's definitely like still really hard, but like, it just seems very realistic at the same time. So it's exciting, but yeah, I mean, there's just so many, I don't know. I just like, I want to do everything, I guess, in running. I want to break 4 minutes in the mile too. It's like, I can't have my kid the rest of my life because I never broke four. No. Hopefully that's, I'll have great. They may not even run. They may not even ever know what 4 minutes means, but they probably will. So
maybe, yeah. I just have to prepare running dog, my running mom, running dad. You know. Runs, yeah.
What's that? They'll make fun of me if I don't make an Olympic team or if I don't break four or, you know, go under 206 or something.
You train solo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if any,
now, do you feel like
marathoners want to come down to Fresno, you know, you can come down here.
Do you feel like that would like be also like a breakthrough for you if you train with a team? Like, how do you feel about group training versus like your solo training that you're doing?
I think it kind of depends on the event. Like, so if I was really serious about making the Olympic team, or at this point even making the Olympic trials in like the 5K or the 10K, or the steeplechase. Well, less so the steeplechase, mainly the 5 and 10K. It'd be very hard to do that solo, just because of the type of work that you have to do is just a lot. It's a lot more difficult to do like VO2 max type work by yourself. I mean, you can do it, but it's just hard. Like, I mean, Yeah, that's why people have training groups. The marathon work, you see a lot more people that kind of can train on your own, because you're always running. You're always doing things like most of your hardest sessions are slower than threshold. It's like when you're not battling that, like, you know, battling lactate, like you don't need as much mental like determination to just get through it. You can kind of tune out and just run, you know, sub threshold. Like it's just not as hard to do. I mean, you can just do it by yourself. Some people would get bored. Like, it gets boring for sure. Like, doing a long run by yourself can be boring, but you don't need that like adrenaline hyped up, like competitor next to you to get the most out of yourself, because you're not running at 100% VO2 max. So it's just different. And I think for me personally, I'm a guy that like would err on the side of racing and training, like, because I just don't really, it's just, when people run with me, I just have to kind of beat you or drop you. It's just, that's just how I am. I'm not going to turn that off. So yeah, that becomes problematic when you're doing high level marathon training, because, I mean, just for obvious reasons. So I think for me, that, I mean, it almost is beneficial to train. I mean, I'd like to have some training partners every now and then, but yeah. It can work. But yeah, again, doing the 5K or 10K, like, it would definitely be helpful to have training partners. But I mean, everyone's different too. Like, some people think the total opposite, like, there's no way I could do these 30 mile long runs by myself. Like, that's not, like, I would quit week two. I'd hate it. So.
Yeah. Do you listen to music when you run?
I do. Yeah, I do now. I have like the Aftershock headphones. So music on there. I just listen to whatever's on Amazon Music, usually like a pop or alternative type music station. I'm not a big music guy, so I don't know any of the people, artists, I guess they're called. I just whatever, but
right,
it is entertaining. I just like to think though, when I'm running, but music helps.
Go ahead.
Oh, to be completely honest, most of the time when I'm running, I'm thinking of like a Strava caption, because that kind of like motivates me. Like a clever, not super arrogant, but a little bit arrogant, like just like a taste, you know, to kind of like, just because that's fun, but also something kind of clever and like creative, but that like pumps me up. So I'm just running through different titles and it kind of like motivates me. Cause like you can't have a title like that if you suck. Like if you have a workout, it's like, you know, what do you say? You can't like, so I like go into the workout coming up with all these like, oh, this is a great one. This is a great title. So then I have to smash the workout or else I can't put, I can't use that one. So that's my motivation is Strava. You know, so yeah, those Strava guys, you know, I have to credit them with my success, because if I captain Strava runs, I just, you know.
Who needs a team? Who needs a team when you got captions, really?
Yeah, that's it.
I'm just reading one right now. It says they shouldn't let crazy people get treadmills. It's a 31-mile run on a treadmill. The one you did on the first, actually.
Yeah, that was like my third day with the treadmill, I think.
Yeah, I hope you got a good one, because you're going to be wearing that thing down, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's the Peloton one. It's basically like a Woodway, I think. Okay. It's a slated belt. It's heavy as heck. It's like this big old giant thing. But yeah, I love it. It's nice. And I hated treadmills. Like, I hated treadmills. But I like my treadmill now. It's weird.
So what happened? Like, why did your mentality change? Like, I also hate running on treadmills, but because of where I'm currently working, when I'm away at work, I can only run on treadmills because I can't physically go outside. So now I'm forced to run on I'm working up north, like in Nunavut, if you know where that is. It's like above Canada. So
it sounds really cold and
yeah, it's freezing. It's freezing, freezing. So I can do like my work on the treadmill, which is I'm getting used to. But what changed for you?
We just had like so many fires. I mean, this was like a crazy record year of fires. And so it was literally too smoky to run. And I have a Fresno where we live has pretty bad air like all the time. So I have a pretty high tolerance, but it was pretty bad this summer. So, and even into the early fall. So I like literally couldn't go outside to run. So I was running on just calling friends and finding people with treadmills and running on their treadmills. And then my friend had a Peloton treadmill and I was like, and he's not even a runner. So I was like, why do you have this? But it was like incredible. And I was like, wow, I actually kind of enjoy this. You know, it's tolerable is how I put it. And then, so I just, yeah, I'm like, man, I run for a living. Like, we're going to have, because we've had fires almost every year now. We just keep getting more of them. So I was like, it's probably a good investment. And then, I found ways to enjoy it. So I put my TV up there and I watch shows or I watch, sometimes I like to watch races. So like I'll have the London Marathon on, like old ones, or the Olympics. I've rewatched the Olympics. Rewatch the Olympic trials, rewatch the marathon project, just a bunch of different marathons. I just like kind of being engaged in the race. I don't know. And then, I mean, I watch like normal people stuff, like shows, like TV, but yeah, it keeps me entertained. And then I have Zwift. Zwift is free for
runners. Oh, yes.
I mean, you're literally just looking at a screen going through like, you know, virtual Paris, but whatever, it's better than
so so what TV shows are you watching now
currently? Gosh, I mean, especially with COVID, you just blow through shows so fast, so yeah, I've watched all of them. It's kind of, I just finished Cobra Kai, the third season. That was good. It's kind of a violent season. I mean, they're all violent, Cobra Kai, but I watched, when I was doing all those treadmill things, I was watching old seasons of Big Brother. I'm a huge Big Brother fan.
Nice.
Do they have a Canadian version?
I think so. Yeah.
Survivor. I was rewatching old episodes of those, actually watching for the first time old episodes. I liked Community, but I've watched it like 4 or 5 seasons, and like I've watched the whole series like 4 or 5 times now, like within like 6 months. So I'm kind of got to take a break from it now. Parks and Rec was my favorite, and Friends, but those are both off Netflix and on. So I'm stopped watching those. I don't think I'm currently watching any series because I finished them all.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm sure I'll find it.
If you're on Netflix, Money Heist was pretty good. I really enjoyed that one. So
Money Heist? Is that a show?
Or yeah, it's a series.
Have I seen it?
They have masks.
I've definitely watched the previews. I don't remember if I watched it or not.
Yeah, it's solid. I'd definitely check that one out. Do you look up to anybody in the sport?
I've never really like had, like when I was a kid and they'd always ask you like, oh, who's your favorite player? Like, who's your favorite basketball player? Who's your favorite, you know, baseball player? I never really had like favorites. I just kind of, I don't know. I liked watching, but I didn't have favorite people. Running. I've never like been like obsessed with like a person. I liked Galen Rupp. I mean, because he was one of the only like American people at the time like being in contention for medals. Now these past couple world championships and stuff, we've had a lot more American distance runners do well, so that's been awesome. But this is probably like, I'm probably not supposed to say this, but when I was, well, for most of my life, like, Alberto Salazar's like kind of experimental mind and like just trying to find out ways to be better and actually having success, like always like I don't like that. It just resonated with me because that's how my mind works. Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of negative things that we can all learn from and that I can learn from being an obsessive person. But I think you can't just throw out all the good things, like, because he was so into technology, like anything you could do to like just looking at the sport from like every possible angle. And I think like some people are against that in a way, because it's like, oh, it should just be like the spirit of the sport is just you wake up and you just go run barefoot and run as hard as you can. And like, there's nothing else. It's just that you just wake up and run as hard as you can barefoot. And it's like, well, that's like, I mean, that's cool too. That's awesome. But like, you know, the whole born to run thing is great, but like, that's not really like our current reality. And I think there's also something beautiful in combining like every aspect of life and just seeing how everything can harmoniously work together, how like all these different people from all these different fields of life, like technology, nutrition, like, you know, everything, strength, like, and then just combine it all into like maximizing human performance. Like, that's cool. Like, I love that. Like, it's just fun. Like, it's just, I just find it like, that's how the world works, is everyone coming together for a common purpose. And obviously running isn't the epitome of life, but like, it's just that principle. And so I always, I don't know, I guess like that in his mindset, just in that aspect of him, inspired me in a way. And I, you know, so, and I'm not gonna, I don't think it's helpful to just because someone did something bad and screwed up that you just disregard any positive thing that they did or any other aspects that maybe was good from them. So,
right. No, I can definitely agree with that. I read about him in a book too, and his training regimen was insane, you know, like absolutely.
Yeah.
But like, he pushed his body to the brink and back, you know. It's like, I mean, he had a short career too, but yeah, definitely pushed the limits of training and performance. So yeah, like from his own personal running, like, yeah, that's, you could, there's quite a bit to learn there for sure. What are some of your favorite places to run where you live? Just in case people listening are close by, or if I ever visit Fresno, where am I running?
Well, you could just go on my Strava. There's only a couple routes that I'm running on. I run in my so my neighborhood has it's a 2.15 mile loop, and I run around that just so many times. I do a lot of my long runs there, even before we moved into this house, just because it's perfect. Like, you can set up all your nutrition, like your bottles and gels and stuff, because you go by it just over 2 miles, and it's continuous because it's just a circle, so you never have to stop. There's not a lot of traffic. It's just a perfect route for continuous training, tempos or anything like that. And it's pretty much mostly flat. And then if I want a hillier route, I have some other routes I go to. But we have a park, so it's called Woodward Park. That's basically, if I could hop my neighbor's backyard, I'd be in the park, but I have to go around. So it takes me a kilometer. It's exactly 1 kilometer to the entrance of the park, which makes it fun when I'm coming home, because I get to run the last 1K fast sometimes. But yeah, so that's a great park. The state championships for cross country is hosted there, so you can imagine it's a great place to run. So I do most of my running there. And then there's a couple bike trails through town that I'll run in every once in a while, but mainly I'm sticking to the park and my neighborhood.
Is there a favorite place you've ran outside of Fresno that you love, someplace else in the world?
Ooh, well, we went to our honeymoon in Hawaii, in Maui, and that was fun. I mean, it's super humid, so it's hard, but I found all these like random places to run. Like, from actually, we stayed on like the opposite side of the island, like on the, I'm blanking on all the names. Haiku, I think, was the little town we were in, but we were kind of like in the middle of the forest. So like, just from our little Airbnb we stayed at, we'd go on runs, and it was crazy how beautiful it was. And then like, there's a few hikes that I found that I just went running on. There was one where I went running and I guess I was gone for like 2 hours or something, and my wife was pretty annoyed with me because we were supposed to, she was waiting for me to go snorkeling, and I was gone longer than I anticipated. But it was awesome, like abandoned hiking trail, and I researched it later, and they had closed it off a few years ago. So I'm like, I was like the only person on this running trail. Like, people haven't been on it for like years. And isn't that cool? Like, where else are you going to go in this touristy location where like you're the only one? So, yeah, I found a bunch of cool spots. So I want to go back and run different routes there. Maybe the Honolulu Marathon would be fun, even though I don't like the humidity, but I don't know.
Yeah. You're close with the heat, you know, like in the heat. So.
Well, that's my treadmill will help with the humidity. Cause it's, I just close all the doors. It's a small little box and you can get the humidity up pretty quick.
That's awesome. What's that?
Especially with my heat lamps.
Yeah. It's a sauna treadmill basically is what you got.
Yeah.
What has running taught you?
I think a lot of people would say that like hard work like helps you be successful. But I think running taught me that it's sometimes you do everything right and you don't have success, and that's just life. Your odds are increased. Like, if you do the things you're supposed to, you're probably going to have success, and you can definitely see that in running. Like, I mean, especially as a coach, I for sure see that. But then there's also the times where, like, even in my own career, I feel like I have done everything right and I was training hard and life and my performances weren't good. And like, sometimes you do that in life. You do everything you're supposed to do and you do it with a good attitude even, and life still sucks. But you can get through it. And so I think that's the thing that I've learned is that, like, you know, even if the performance isn't there or like life isn't how you're expecting it would be, like it can still be good and you can still enjoy the process and you can still have hope that like things will get better eventually. You don't know when sometimes.
Yeah, totally. And what does running mean to you?
Well, when I first think about running, I just think of joy. It's just fun. Not all the time, but most of the time. And yeah, it's just a great opportunity to just go like challenge yourself and enjoy figuring out what your body can do. And I think sometimes the reason I get so annoyed with like all the discussions on like doping and shoes is because it's just like, yeah, I get why it matters, but it's like, I don't even care. I just want to run. Like, I just like running and I just want to try to beat people. I don't even care if they like in the moment, I don't even care if they doped. I don't care what shoes they have. Like, it's so fun just trying to beat them. Not that I'm condoning anything, but I'm just like, I love running. So yeah, it's just a great sport, and let's not complicate it too much.
Yeah, for sure. And like you say, like that's all, it's in the spirit of being like competitive too. And as long as you have a good attitude, which it sounds like you do, then it can be fun. You know, competition can be fun too. I always found it funny. Like, even like people sometimes are scared to compete, you know, they're scared to like put it all on the line and for fear that, you know, maybe they might fail or it might not go the way they want it to, but how else are you going to know? Right. So I really like what you said there. CJ, where can people find out more about you and follow what you're up to?
I probably post the most on Strava. So I'm just, I don't know how many other CJ Albertsons there are, but if you just put in my name, you'll be able to find me. yeah, that's the most part. So, you know, I'm trying to think of those clever captions. I'm on Instagram. I'll probably be posting more on Instagram, but I don't know. I feel like I always say that and I never do. So I don't know. But yeah, Strava is probably the best part, the best place. And I'll probably be doing, like, people have thought my training's been kind of crazy, but it'll probably only get more crazy. So, or at least in other people's eyes, in my mind, it's totally normal, and everything I do is like just like not crazy at all. It's just how you do things. But
you're gonna do what works for you.
I think it'll be kind of fun. It'll get more interesting, I think.
Do you plan on like blogging about it, or I don't know, sharing photos of your setup, or?
Yeah. No, I try to share photos of myself. I took a picture of my heat lamps the other day. Okay, so I've actually thought about this. Like, maybe I'll get a better phone just so I can take pictures that don't look terrible. I have an iPhone. I think it's like basically like an iPhone 5 or 6. I don't know, whatever, like 7 generations ago. And it just, it doesn't, my photos don't look good. One, cause I'm not a good photographer, and two, the actual camera just isn't as good as these new phones. So, I don't know, maybe I'll get a better phone, so my photos are worth looking at. But yeah, I'm trying to I'll have my wife take a picture of me with the altitude tent and running in my sauna I made and my treadmill setup. I don't know. I'm just not good with pictures.
It's okay.
It always looks bad. Like, I don't understand what people are doing, how their pictures like. it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it.
I'm sure you'll figure it out. Practice makes perfect with the content stuff. So
yeah. Yes.
Well, CJ, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Like, really fun conversation. I really enjoyed chatting with you and seeing what you're all about. Love the competition, but also your good like human nature, and that you're trying to help the youth and stuff to be like better athletes too. So paying it forward to others, and it was great having you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin. And hopefully it was good. I just realized I'm like really tired right now. On the computer since like 8 our time, so I don't know.
Go have a rest.
But thanks for having me on. This was fun.
And all the best this coming year.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Take care. Are you already subscribed to La Rundown, Running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi, and hosted by Justin Pugliese.